Today on the show, we discuss what it takes to be a hero and the entanglements that can hold us back from doing what needs to be done. Welcome to Lore Party, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and universes of our favorite video games. I'm Connor.
And I'm Lawrence.
And I'm excited to be back at it again on the infamous grind. Love it.
Yes.
And we got a heater this time. Got a great topic for you once again.
Yes, if you're a fan of Tenet and or The Umbrella Club, you might find this episode to be particularly interesting.
You mean Umbrella Academy, right?
Oh, yeah, shit.
But no, it is great to be discussing Infamous again, and we're kind of going back to the beginning, going back to the original game. We covered Second Son last time, but we're winding the clock back to the game that started it all, the first Infamous.
And quite literally a clock rewind this episode will be.
Yes. Yeah, we're winding back several clocks today. So we wanted to discuss the main villain from the first Infamous game, a mysterious, very enigmatic character named Kessler. And it's needless to say, you find some shocking truths about him at the end of the first Infamous game. And we wanted to just sort of get into where exactly he was coming from, what kind of motivated him, and really what was behind his master plan, because it's a little confusing at first. I mean, I played this game way back in college, and I've been kind of unwinding what was going on with Kessler sort of ever since, and been waiting to talk about it ever since, so it's a great opportunity to finally get this out in the air.
Yeah, and I think, unlike most villains in video games, Kessler is a lot different because, you know, Kessler has a lot of different motives going back and forth. He's more than just like your typical evil villain, even right, though he appears to be that on the outside.
Right. His mission is very personal. Like, he doesn't seem to have many personal attachments throughout the game, but you realize at the end it's all extremely personal to him. It comes from a very human place. I guess we might as well just go ahead and get the major spoiler out of the way for 10 or so year old game.
If you haven't played Infamous by now, I mean, you're probably not going to.
You've been warned.
Right.
Consider yourself warned. We find out that Kessler is basically the future self of main protagonist Cole McGrath. He's basically Cole McGrath from the future. And that kind of turns the entire narrative of the first game on its head, needless to say.
Yeah, and they did a good job of throwing that in there once he's already done some really, like, kind of crazy, questionable things.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you haven't listened to our last episode on Infamous, where we kind of explained, like, there are powered people in this world that are known as conduits, and they're people that can control some sort of element or have some sort of unique, like, destructive ability. And amongst these people, Kessler is probably one of the most powerful.
Yeah, definitely. He comes from a future where conduits it's not really clear how many conduits there are in the world, if like the event that gave Kessler his powers created other conduits, or if he was like the only one. But yeah, either way, he was known as a very strong, very capable conduit, one of the most powerful there is. I think basically the same way that Cole gets his powers, there is some information that points toward Kessler kind of getting his powers in the same way, but just slightly different circumstances.
See, it's unclear. I think there are several schools of thought of how this goes.
Right.
I think it's like it might be more closely to how, like, Delson in the second game gets his powers, where they just kind of naturally occur.
Yeah, they just manifest themselves somehow. We don't really know how.
Right.
So what we do have, what information we do have, though, tells us that Kessler is just, you know, in his own timeline, he's just kind of a family man. He just seems to be a regular guy with a wife and two young daughters.
And lightning powers.
Yeah, that too. that little detail. Yeah, a wife, couple kids. He can shoot lightning bolts out of his hands. So he just has these powers. He's very capable with them. But then, out of nowhere, an immensely destructive and monstrous conduit known as the Beast appears and starts just destroying cities, entire cities. And what does Kessler do? Well, he could have fought, and it's made clear that he was strong enough to defeat the Beast, but with a wife and two daughters, he had a lot to lose. So he decided to put his family first and just sort of avoid the danger that the Beast posed.
Yeah, I mean, they don't give too much explanation as to why he ran in the first place, other than he had a family. But I was always curious if he was actually strong enough to beat him, or if he was just the only person that could fight.
It does seem as though Kessler was probably the only individual capable of stopping the Beast's rampage. And so, you know, you'd think that he would take the opportunity to end the threat early. But the way I see it, in his own timeline, Kessler just thought, I'm not going to put my family in the line of fire, basically. I'm not going to put them in danger by joining this fight. Maybe he thought, I'll let the authorities handle it. Maybe the army will take care of the Beast. But of course, that ends up not working. So he basically just keeps fleeing. Yeah, so whatever his reasoning was, it seemed like he basically just decided, this isn't my fight. My place is with my family and keeping them safe. But unfortunately, he eventually ran out of places to run to. At a certain point, there was basically nothing left of the world. The Beast had destroyed everything, and he ended up losing his wife and daughters. And at that point, he decides that he failed by, you know, choosing not to take action, and he decides he's going to do something about that. He's going to go back in time, change the past, and make himself ready to face the Beast. Kind of a mind bender there, but that's what he decides to do.
Yes. So it seems like in his grief and you know, with the loss of his family, he actually gains this new ability to take like a one-way trip back in time.
Yeah, it is made clear in the game that the trip is one way. So it's like we're not going to fact check the science on it. It's just, you know, he makes it work somehow. Quantum entanglement or whatever. He makes it work.
Supercharging electronic particles inside of a being and direct.
That sounds right. Honestly, I'll give it to you. That's fine. But it does seem, though, that a big part of his motivation, though, and we'll get into this in more detail soon. But at the moment of his loss, when he's, you know, lost his family, the world has been destroyed. Basically, it seems as though he's decided that his past self, he needs to change something about himself, not just about how events went down. He needs to change something about himself. So that's what sends him back in time, and that's what basically kicks off the events of the first game. It's just personal for Kessler. It seems like the fact that world was destroyed barely seems to make a difference to him. It was more about, I failed to act and my family paid the price. It's more personal for Kessler than, I can't let the world be destroyed. It's more about, I can't let my family down again. That's what it seems as though his motivation comes from.
Right, because even in the game, they said that the Beast followed him around.
Right, so, yeah.
What it seemed like, he had plenty of opportunities to fight back. He just never did because he was more concerned with them.
Right. But yeah, that does lead him to go many, many years back in time. And I got to give him credit. This guy goes through such lengths. It's unbelievable, like the foresight he has, the detail and the scale of the plans that he puts into place. He goes back in time decades before the first game takes place so that he can basically take over this secret society, kind of an Illuminati sort of deal called
the First Sons.
That's right, the First Sons. And under his leadership, they start researching and developing something called the Ray Sphere.
Yes.
And we later learn that, we learn at the beginning that this is the object that gives Cole his powers.
And what he does here is absolutely incredible. Like, he goes back, finds this organization, he knows what they're studying, mm-hmm. he usurps like control of this group and then advances their technology to get it ready, all because he wants to use it to accelerate his self in the past getting his powers.
Right. He basically engineers all of these events so that his past self gets powers early.
Yes.
It's crazy.
And it seems as though he simultaneously sets up the event that causes the destruction in the future.
Right. He knows that his past self, like, he's lived it, so of course he knows. He knows intimately that his past self, Cole McGrath, is a young man working in a fictional city called Empire City. It seems to be based on or inspired by New York, but yeah, Empire City is where Cole lives, and he's working as a bike messenger. Kessler knows all that, so he decides, I'm going to put the race sphere in a parcel, in a package, and then I'm going to call the company and specifically request that Cole McGrath carry this package. And then I'm going to call Cole's cell phone and tell him to open it. And when he does, the race sphere is going to go off, and it's going to cause like a almost like a nuclear level explosion, killing thousands of people easily, and also giving Cole his awakening Cole's conduit powers.
Yes, using the energy of all those people that it killed too, which is
it's nuts. Yeah, that, I forgot about that, but you're right. What the ray sphere does is it kind of explodes out, absorbs the bioelectric energy of everyone around it, and then transfers all of it back into the epicenter where Cole is. So most of the people who died in the ray sphere's explosion gave Cole his powers. It's creepy. That's a weird detail, but that's a good point. Yeah, that's what happens.
And as we get further along with what Kessler did, it starts to make sense. Like all of this starts to make sense. It's just really grim. All the things that Kessler does to make sure that Cole gets his powers and can use them effectively.
Exactly. And it starts to show us just how uncompromising Kessler is in this mission. I mean, he's okay with destroying a chunk of Empire City, killing thousands of people, just so that Cole gets his powers early. He's that dedicated to sort of atoning for his mistakes and righting the wrongs of his past, which is also Cole's future. I know, try and keep up. This is weird, but that's how it shakes out.
You know, if you're listening and you're like, well, wait a minute, that's crazy. I gotta say, like, the thing to remember is, I think in Kessler's mind, his world was destroyed, and this is a world that's similar to his with people that look the same, and he's there, but to him, he's already lost everything.
Yeah. The world that Cole McGrath lives in is not Kessler's world, so he's not connected to it. That's a good point.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break here. I've got to go talk to myself. But stick around. We'll be right back.
We interrupt this podcast for a preview for a different podcast. I'm Bruce, a regular contributor to Lore Party. In the unforgiving world of the gods, there is an endless, vicious cycle of fathers killing sons, brothers killing brothers, and sons killing mothers. But Kratos, the ghost of Sparta, looks to end that cycle with his son Atreus, as they journey through the various realms of the Norse pantheon. Tune into our God of War episodes where my co-host Abu and I discuss the latest installment in the God of War series from 2018 and the insightful ways the game creates more depth in a beloved franchise. Just check out our Lore Party feed and search God of War. It should be easy to find. We now continue your regularly scheduled podcast.
But no, yeah, this leads us to kind of the rest of Kessler's plan. The ray sphere, you know, the explosion and giving Cole his powers, that's only the beginning. That's the tip of the iceberg. The rest of Kessler's plan gets even more intricate and complicated. He starts, you know, moving these little chess pieces, and part of his plan is to turn Empire City against Cole, kind of make him a public enemy. And, you know, one way that he does that is early on, he convinces or, you know, pays or hires or whatever. He gets a kind of a hacker slash pirate broadcaster guy calling himself the Voice of Survival. He shows up on a broadcast and says, I have received information confirming that Cole McGrath, this guy here, I'm holding up a picture of Cole McGrath, he is responsible for the, you know, the explosion in the historical district. He's the cause of all of our problems. Get him. And so the entire populace is now targeting Cole as the cause of all their problems, which is insane.
Which is the start of just a shitty just domino effect. But at the time he caught that food that was dropped, mm-hmm. and he shared it with all of these people, and then, you know, gets labeled a terrorist.
Yeah, Cole helps get a supply drop down from a statue, and he's like helping people out. Then suddenly they turn on him a minute later. It's messed up. This also costs him the relationship that he had with his long-term girlfriend, Trish. Trish's younger sister died in the explosion, and suddenly she's like, what, you were behind this, Cole? And she walks away, and they're estranged from then on out. So everyone turns on him. Only his best friend Zeke sticks around, because Zeke is a true ride or die. Just wanted to throw that out there. Zeke's a real bro.
Yeah.
but
oh God.
That's all to say, though, that kind of the end goal of this, Kessler wants to introduce Cole to adversity. He wants to make Cole's life difficult. It's like that classic, you know, your parents making you do chores because it builds character. It's kind of like that, except he's also trying to show Cole, you can't rely on anyone but yourself, is kind of the message I think he's trying to send him.
Yeah, he's teaching him that, like, do what needs to be done to get the mission done, and look outside of yourself, because, like, Kessler is teaching Cole to do whatever it takes to complete your mission for the greater good, no matter what happens.
Right. Even if you don't have the people on your side, you still have to do what's right.
Right. And he teaches him this in the most fucked up ways possible. This was probably the most messed up decision I think I've had to make in a video game in the longest time.
Yeah, man.
So you have to, you get a call from Kessler, because at this point in the game, he is in touch with you, and it just seems like he's doing whatever it takes to fuck with you. So he puts you through this, like, challenge where you have to save these people. And so then you end up in a park, and he presents you with two options. He's kidnapped Trish, the love of your life, your estranged girlfriend, and he's got her hanging from a building on some contraption. And then on the other side, he's got six doctors. Trish is a nurse, by the way. So
right.
She's like a first responder, and she's been out helping people because at the time of the Raysphere explosion, there was also a plague that came because of it, and the city is in quarantine, so she's been helping people.
Right.
So Kessler is like, okay, there are these six doctors in a, like, apocalypse-style destroyed quarantine city that these people can help a ton of people.
Yeah.
Or you can...
Very valuable people.
Like, or you can choose to save the life of the woman that you love. So you pick the doctors... He drops Trish, and she dies. If you decide to try to save Trish, you find out that it's not actually Trish, and she's over with the doctors, and they all get dropped.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like a decoy.
Yeah, so Kessler sets it up where he's forcing you to make the decision that will impact the greater good, even if it comes at a cost, a personal cost to you, because it doesn't matter. You're here for the greater good and nothing more.
Right. Your job is to reduce harm, create good, and if I'm remembering correctly, if you do choose the doctors, if you do the kind of quote-unquote hero choice, the canonically good choice, Kessler calls and he kind of congratulates you. He says, I'm proud of you, Cole. You made the right decision, even while you were mourning the loss of Trish, and Cole just doesn't want to hear it. He's like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to find you and kill you.
Yeah.
But if you make the other choice... Trish kind of, admonishes you from, oh, you're so selfish and yada, yada. And throughout the game, Kessler, like you said, is in touch with Cole, and he contacts him from time to time. And a lot of cases, he admonishes Cole for decisions he's making, or he calls him a coward, or he says, you lack conviction, Cole. You're not acting decisively enough and stuff like it. Sounds like a coach almost, like he's just disappointed in Cole.
Yeah.
When you're first playing through for the first time, you're like, What is your deal, man? What do you want from me?
Right.
But knowing that Kessler is Cole, it it changes things. It changes the dynamic. You start to see that Kessler has kind of like a self-loathing thing going on, and he takes it out on Cole, especially in the instance of choosing to save Trish, because he'll just say like, "Oh, you have no spine whatsoever. You don't see the bigger picture," that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the lesson he's trying to drive home there, kind of like you mentioned, Lawrence, but just even if you have loved ones, they can't come before the greater good. And, you know, knowing what he came from in his future timeline, he learned that lesson himself the hard way. So he kind of knows what it's like.
Right.
And he's come back in time to share that pain with Cole. And it's messed up, but knowing his reasons for that, it changes a lot about these interactions that they have.
And, you know, even flipping it on its head a little bit, you know, Trish was also the love of Kessler's life, too.
That's right. Yeah. Jeez. Forget about that. Yeah. In the future, Cole marries Trish and they have a family together. And that's what Kessler comes from. He has to come back in time and basically orchestrate the death of his future wife and torture his past self, all in the name of preparing him to make the hard choices. It's ridiculous. It's insane.
Yeah.
When you think about it that way.
Yeah, this man came from a very shitty future and yes, doesn't want that to happen again. And is he's doing everything he can to make sure it doesn't. And it's like, you gotta admire his conviction, not really, but kind of.
there's something about it though. Yeah, it's definitely, conviction is a big part of it. And, you know, that's kind of another pillar of his plan. Like, you know, if we review really quick, his plan was, you know, set off the race fear, give Cole's powers, make his life hard, make him, you know, harden up and toughen up and, you know, be ready to make the tough decisions. Another thing is, though, just keep taunting him, like, you know, try and make him better. And, you know, we've touched on the phone tag they play, kind of talking to each other, and Cole not having any idea what's going on, and Kessler is sort of holding all the cards and pulling all the strings and just kind of giving Cole little clues, like, I know what's coming next, and I need to make you ready for it.
Yeah. There was, like, your first encounter with him,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, he just kind of appears. I believe it was in one of the districts in Empire City. And
I think it was the first one, the Neon District, I think.
Yeah. And he, like, grabs your face and gives you this vision of the future, and you see all this destruction, and then he just leaves. And so you think... this guy must have done that. You know, he must have done this. Like, this is the, you know, big bad of the game. And then he disappears.
Right. He just drops this nightmare fuel onto Cole and then pieces out. And right. Cole just kind of assumes, like, oh, this is what this guy's planning. He's going to destroy the world. I got to stop him. But yeah, no, not quite.
Who better to fuck with you than your own self?
Exactly. He knows everything about you.
Right.
But, you know, just adding up all these cryptic little clues that Kessler gives Cole, like, you know, the apocalyptic future to come and admonishing him for being cowardly or selfish, it all adds up, to me at least, it adds up to this, you know, picture of Kessler. Even, you know, he's a badass, he's a mastermind, he's a psycho, but underneath all that, he's just a really guilty guy. He's a family man who lost everything and he hates himself for it. And he transfers that hate onto Cole.
Yeah.
Everything driving his plans and his ambitions, it comes from, I failed, and my past self cannot fail. I won't let him fail. So then it all culminates toward the end of the game with the final battle, the showdown. And like you touched on, Lawrence, Cole just thinks, I'm about to fight this guy, and I'm going to prevent this end-of-the-world scenario he showed me. I'm going to prevent him from doing all that, and also I'm avenging Trish right now. But after the battle, everything flips upside down, as we mentioned, because Kessler sort of finally comes clean and shares the entire truth with Cole.
Yeah, and it's really powerful. Like, there's a really powerful, like, clip from the game that wraps everything up.
I look down at Kessler, reveling in my victory. And then I heard him whisper, Trish, I love you. Please forgive me. Then he was on me, fingers digging into my face. As Kessler's secrets played out in my head, I finally began to understand. I saw his nemesis, a beast intent on extinguishing all life. In those early days, Kessler could have used his powers to stop it, but instead he fled with his family, leaving others to fend for themselves. Hunted for years, Kessler and his family watched as the rest of the world went to hell. And then it was too late to fight. Too late to save anyone. In that moment of failure and grief, he used his newest and most dangerous power. He went on a one-way trip back in time, attempting to rewrite history. Kessler seized control of the First Sons and accelerated the race sphere's development. Decades spent plotting the blast, organizing the quarantine, finding me. Yet the thing that drove him forward, Kessler's sole link to the past, was a picture from his wedding day, when he married Trish, with Zeke as his best man. My brain lurched, unable to accept that Kessler and I were the same person, that he'd come back in time to mold me into the savior he failed to be, going so far as to kill the woman he loved, I loved, so that I wouldn't be tied down by emotions. No, Kessler wanted me strong, ruthless, so that when I faced the beast, I'd be capable of making impossible decisions, all for the common good. And then Kessler fell back.
That's the smoking gun when Cole realizes that the man he just defeated in battle and basically killed, Kessler, is himself from the future. These are basically Kessler's dying words and dying actions, because there's this big showdown. Cole, you know, gives Kessler everything he's got. He pours all of his power into him and blasts him with a lightning bolt. And with his final action, yeah, Kessler grabs Cole's skull and just shows him all of that. And his last words were basically, "Trish, I love you. Forgive me."
Right.
And it's just, oh, man, that hits me, because that's like, kind of he did it for her, but also he had to cut her loose. He had to make it so Cole was willing to let go of her in order to save the world. It's crazy.
And yeah, he came here with a singular mission to train himself. He was prepared to die. He was prepared to do
whatever
it took. That was such a such a hard scene. And there was a part in it that really stood out. When it was done and Cole realized what happened, he was like, you know, "I'm seething with rage. Like, I hate Kessler. I hate everything about him." And then but it's honestly, to hate Kessler is to hate himself. And I think part of it is he kind of understands.
Yeah. It's like Cole saw a potential future for himself, but he also saw kind of a dark side of himself. He saw the raw focus and the uncompromising ambition that Kessler had, and Cole knows, "I have that within me too. I have that potential." But he kind of decides, like, "I won't become that." It's weird because Kessler's plan kind of works.
Yeah.
He sort of does what he set out to do. Cole now knows that the beast is kind of inevitably coming and he has to be ready for it. He now knows how to use his powers, how to fight with them. And he now knows that what's on the line, what's at stake. And it kind of comes full circle. Kessler basically made sure that Cole would be dedicated to succeeding where his future self had failed.
Right.
But this does leave us with kind of a broader question. Like, was there another way? And of course there were other ways, but I think from Kessler's perspective, the only way to be sure was to change fundamentally something about himself, because the beast was able to destroy the world in the future because of Cole, because of Kessler. He basically thought, like, I'm the reason the beast wins, so I have to make myself better. But, you know, he could have just prevented the ray sphere from being invented so that the beast wouldn't exist, but who knows? I guess Kessler just assumed there's no way to be sure other than to make myself ready for whatever happens.
See, I was thinking about that today. I went back, looked at the end of the game. I watched some like playthroughs since it's been a bit. And I did used to think that, like, you know, hey, why didn't he just go back and do some stuff? But you know, even after playing Infamous 2 and then realizing, like, Kessler also sped up the production of the Ray Sphere.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, without getting too headcanon-y, I see, like, two potential futures where you have one where the Ray Sphere is completed and some accidental experiment happens in the conduit who, you know, ultimately becomes the Beast. John gets his powers, or his powers naturally occur, just like how Delson's and the other conduits do after Infamous 2, and before, you know, like at the beginning of Second Son.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we don't necessarily know if it was the Ray Sphere that caused the problem, because there was also no plague in the future. It was just stated that the Beast came.
Right.
I kind of look at it like the reason why Kessler did some of the stuff that he did was because he didn't want to leave anything up to chance. Like, he was covering all probable events. Like, Kessler wanted to make sure that no matter what happened, Cole was prepared to face this this villain. And he went so far as to even being instrumental in the creation of that villain in the past.
Right. Right. Yeah, because he knows who eventually becomes the Beast. I guess that's, yeah, I think you have a good point. He thought, maybe I can prevent John White specifically from becoming the Beast, but there's no way to guarantee that someone else won't get the same powers and do the same thing as the Beast did in my time.
Right.
So yeah, he's kind of covering all of his angles by just making sure Cole is ready and willing to do what he couldn't. Well, that about wraps it up. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us to grow the show. And be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @lore_party. And check out our YouTube page for fun bonus videos and highlights. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.